Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On December 8, 2020, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Facebook Inc. versus Duguid. The issue before the court was whether the definition of an automatic telephone dialing system in the Telephone Consumer Protection Act of 1991 encompasses any device that can, quote, store and, quote, automatically dial telephone numbers, even if the device does not use a random or sequential number generator. Megan L. Brown, partner at Wiley Ryan, and Professor Daniel Lyons, professor of law at Boston College School of Law, join us today to discuss this case's oral argument.
The Supreme Court today heard oral arguments this morning in a case involving Facebook. They were sued in a class action for alleged violations of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act arising out of some text messages that they had sent to an individual who had not been a customer or user of Facebook and had a hard time getting the text messages to stop. They were security-based text messages. As is not surprising with the TCPA, this was styled as a very large class action, and the TCPA offers enormous statutory damages when you get class actions going. That's why it's become a favorite of the plaintiff's bar, and we've seen a substantial uptick in litigation under it. But in the case that's before the court, and Professor Lyons is going to talk in a little bit about some of the history and how we got here, the TCPA has actually been a sort of a frequent flyer at the Supreme Court in the past couple of terms, but the Telephone Consumer Protection Act was a 1991 statute, and I'm not going to get into all of the nooks and crannies of it because it can get very reticulated, as anyone listening to this morning's argument found, but it's at 47 U.S.C. 227, and the parties here are really fighting about the meaning of a core definition in the TCPA for automatic telephone dialing system. In 1991, Congress passed the statute to protect the privacy and quietude of Americans from annoying calls by making some calls illegal if they don't meet certain conditions, and they are like consumer consent, and they are placed using an ATDS. And this term has been vexing to many, both at the Federal Communications Commission, in private litigation, and in compliance planning, which we do sum up. So there's been previous litigation. What's up at the court now is really a core statutory construction question about the meaning of the terms in this particular provision of what is an ATDS. The definition of ATDS is a gating mechanism for the obligations on calling parties, such as consent or some of the exceptions, as well as for lawsuits for violations of the TCPA, which has a private cause of action and statutory damages. But in short, in order to sue, a plaintiff has to be able to show that the call or text was made using an automatic telephone dialing system or an auto dialer. So if it's not made using an auto dialer, you can't sue over it. The definition, and I wish I had a whiteboard to show you all this, the text will become important, but we're not going to be too belaboring it. It defines an ATDS as equipment that has the capacity, quote, to store or produce telephone numbers to be called, and those words are going to be important in a second, using a, quote, random or sequential number generator. And then it also says the ATDS, you know, has the capacity to dial such numbers. You wouldn't think that this would generate, you know, hundreds of cases of disputes, but it has. It's also been pending as a definitive question before the FCC for some time. But this particular case has sort of every doctrinal statutory interpretation canon that a law student could want to review, from the rules of punctuation to the placement of commas. So it was a really a feast for those who care about those statutory construction issues, because the Ninth Circuit had held, and the plaintiffs here would like the court to conclude, that you don't have to use, you don't have to trigger the, quote, random or sequential number generator piece if you're talking about the word store. So they want to be able to say you're an ATDS if you can store telephone numbers to be called, regardless of whether that storage happens via a random or sequential number generator. Facebook, on the other hand, says no, that adverbial phrase using a sequential number generator modifies both verbs, store or produce. So shockingly, this created a lot of verbal jousting today at the podium. Interestingly, both parties previously in their briefing had filed briefs that cited heavily to Brian Garner, who's a sort of linguistics guru and wrote a couple of books with Justice Scalia. He ended up representing the plaintiffs at the podium, and we'll talk about in a few minutes how that all went. But really, this is a fundamental fight that's been going on at the FCC and others, and in courts for some time over how broad or how narrow to construe ATDS, particularly in light of changing technologies. And so one theme that came up repeatedly is that the lower court and the plaintiff's theory here would enable TCPA liability to attach potentially to even consumers' use of smartphones, which certainly, as mini computers, have the ability to store numbers and to dial numbers and to engage in random or sequential number generation. And that's not fanciful. The FCC recognized that possibility from a previous broad interpretation they used, and it showed up repeatedly in the briefing and the arguments about the absurd consequence of the Ninth Circuit's approach here, which built on a previous Ninth Circuit opinion. So numerous amicus and the Solicitor General, who was involved here, urged the court to hold that the most natural reading of this provision is that the capacity to use a random or sequential number generator relates to both storing and producing, and that if you don't have that, you don't have an ATDS. On the other side, the plaintiffs and consumer groups, as amici, frame Facebook's approach as a so-called narrowing of the TCPA's auto-dialer definition. They dismiss concerns that this approach to the text would convert smartphones into auto dialers. But as we'll talk about, and as Justice Sotomayor recognized, that's a very real possibility, given the litigious nature of all of this. So that's really the framing of this. It's a high stakes debate because there are hundreds, if not thousands, of TCPA class actions filed in the federal courts every year. That number has been growing, particularly after a more recent Ninth Circuit case. And it's a definition that has been sort of pulled and pushed by the FCC and litigants, and it's created a lot of uncertainty. And so that's really the fight before the court, is the parsing of this statutory language, which canons should carry the day, and how much, for example, the court should be concerned about the fact that this is a 30-year-old statute that certainly didn't have, at its inception, some of the modern technologies that are used in the calling ecosystem. So I think it'd be really helpful now if, Dan, if you maybe could sort of tee up a little bit how we got here. I know you've looked at some of the cases that have come before this. We've been involved in some of those, but I'd love for you to set that table.
Yeah, so just to sharpen the pencil a little bit on some of the observations Megan was making, I think it's exactly right that this isn't just a battle over sort of esoteric statutory minutiae that would be only of interest to telecom profs and grammar pedants. There's a really important backstory here that helps explain why the Supreme Court is giving this the attention that it is. According to WebRecon, which tracks these things, TCPA filings have exploded in the last decade. They've grown tenfold from something like 350 cases in 2010 to well over 3,000, 3,267 last year. And even that figure is down from the high point of 4,638 cases in 2016. And a lot of this is being driven by the expansive reading of the TCPA that we've seen in the Ninth Circuit and in some other circuits that are driving the case that is at the bar. Given that the average settlement for a TCPA class action is roughly about $6.5 million, it's not a surprise that this is becoming one of the hottest areas of class action litigation and drawing plaintiffs' bar's attention. And these aren't cases that are being brought by robocallers, right? Which are the entities that Congress ostensibly was targeting by the TCPA back in 1991. Then Commissioner Ajit Pai chronicled one case against the LA Lakers, who had offered fans a chance to text a message to the team to be placed on the Jumbotron. And when the Lakers acknowledged the receipt of each message with a text saying, you know, not all messages are going to be selected for the Jumbotron, they became the subject of a suit for violating the statute. And in 2018, the Philadelphia Inquirer was featuring a story about a 21-year-old who had really made a career out of manufacturing TCPA suits through things like placing an order, freezing his credit card payments so that the company would call back, and then suing them for having placed an unsolicited automated call. And as Megan had noted, this is not the first time the Supreme Court has taken up this statute. I wrote an article for the Free State Foundation's Perspectives piece earlier this year that was noting that Duguid is the third TCPA case that the justices have heard in the last 3 years, although they involve very different problems with the statute. The first of them was a case called PDR Network, which involved the scope of the statute's junk fax provision. But the court ultimately ended up remanding that case with regard to the intersection of the lower court's decision and some prior FCC guidance under the Hobbs Act, so which of them should control. The second case called Barr versus American Association of Political Consultants involved a portion of the statute where the government had attempted to create an exemption from the robocall ban for efforts to collect government debt. And the court had held that favoring government speech over other types of speech for robocalls violated the First Amendment. But rather than striking down the statute, as the plaintiffs had requested, the court severed that government speech exemption. There's a First Amendment angle to the current case, the Facebook case as well, although it's only really discussed in passing. Facebook had argued that if, as Duguid had suggested, the statute prohibits virtually all calls from a smartphone without consent, then the statute is overbroad and chills more speech than necessary to satisfy the TCPA's goals of protecting privacy and protecting public safety. That issue didn't come up at oral argument, and I don't really expect it to play a serious role in the court's decision. I don't know, more you want to add, Megan?
No, I mean, I think the First Amendment angle is an interesting one. It has been brought up in repeated TCPA cases for more than a decade. I've wondered if the more modern court with a more open view of the you know, constitutional validity of commercial speech and other speech would want to bite on that. I thought they did a nice job in Barr in sort of explaining that the government can't kind of self-deal when it's going to carve out exemptions to the TCPA. But I think more to be seen on the First Amendment implications of that. But the core argument is an overbroad TCPA statute really chills a lot of beneficial communications. It's not, you know, it has a farther reach, the TCPA does, than just getting at sort of the annoying IRS calls or, you know, scam attempts that come in. It really does affect the legitimate communications of a variety of U.S. businesses, large and small, as well as charitable organizations. So I think there's a there, and we'll continue to see that pop up. But of course, you know, statutory arguments come first. So those, you know, that's sort of where the court is ending up here. And quite frankly, it's high time that the auto dialer definition get resolved. And we can discuss this in a little bit, but my preference would have been for the FCC to deal with this. They've had ample opportunity. There's several petitions that are before them to fix this and to clarify it, and they have not done so. So they've sort of left it to the courts to hash it out, which I think is unfortunate. And I guess while we're on that, Dan, maybe I could just do a little atmospherics here for folks, right? Some of the impression folks could have taken from the oral argument is that there's the TCPA, and that's it. That's the only thing standing between, you know, the marauding robocallers and the public to be victimized. I think that was a miss, I think, in some of the advocacy here discussion. Is there's a whole lot of agency activity, both at the Federal Communications Commission, the Federal Trade Commission, and in Congress, that is putting out a lot of positive steps that are going to be much more impactful to dealing with abusive and illegal calls than the TCPA and class action litigation. You know, for the past 3 years, Chairman Pai at the FCC, and really on a unanimous and bipartisan basis, has been, for example, clarifying the authorities of carriers to engage in blocking activity. That's not a gimme. There's risk to blocking telephone calls under federal law. Getting tools out to consumers to block calls, implementing a new statute passed by Congress late last year called the TRACED Act, putting in new technology protocols called Shaken and Stir that will help authenticate calls, and setting up a reassigned numbers database. One fault that a lot of folks make is if a business calls a cell number that has been reassigned, which is a pretty frequent occurrence, if they do that more than once, they can get hit with a TCPA lawsuit. So they need a reliable place to go and look for those reassigned numbers. So the FCC has been a veritable, hive of activity on robocalling. And I think that was a bit missing from the discussion here. The TCPA, from my perspective, is not the central mover in protecting consumers from unwanted calls. It's a lot of the stuff that's been done in the last 3 years.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And we can get into this a little later if we wanted to. My sense is not only is the fight against robocalls shifting to other legal tools, but in fact, the primary use of the TCPA is not helping out in the battle against robocalls at all. I think the TCPA has sort of gone off the rails and is moving in a completely different direction that is not only not helping us with robocalls, but actively undermining our ability to achieve data security.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.